Today, I finished the discussion about renormalization theory for the 5-4 theory. So I will make a summary of what we did for 5-4 at one loop order for 5-4. I'm going to discuss in a more complete way the issue of having what's called running complete constant. And I show how this fits in a general framework, which is called renormalization group. Which is something which is easy to check explicitly at one loop, which is very general. And then I'll discuss two more topics if I have time. First, what about scale invariance? Remember, we discussed for the 5-4, massless 5-4 theory, that the theory had a scale invariance in four dimensions. And we'll see that, in fact, the fact that the theory has to be renormalized means that the scale invariance has an anomaly, which means it's spoiled by quantum effect, but it's spoiled in a very specific way. It doesn't just disappear, it's deformed, transformed into something more complicated, but controlled by a renormalization group. And finally, if time, I will say a few words on the relation between this QFT renormalization, which is a standard way renormalization theory was introduced in the 50s and the 60s, and its relation with the Wilsonian renormalization group approach that we have been discussing in the statistical mechanical course. I will show what are the relations and what, in fact, are two facets of the same formalism. So, okay, so first, let me start by reminding you what we have done yesterday. We started from the 5-4 theory. We consider the 5-4 theory in four dimensions. I made all my calculation in an Euclidean framework, but that's not something important because you can redo all the calculation I did and all the argument in the Lorentzian framework with real-time and Minkowski momenta. And the point is that we see that at one loop, there are, if you do naive perturbation theory calculations using the classical action, the classical Lagrangian for the 5-4 theory, you run into the problem of ultraviolet divergences. And I gave on some explicit example the fact that those ultraviolet divergences can be somehow, you know, dealt with or subtracted by changing the action. So, and for a long time, this seems, especially for mathematicians, something mysterious. It was something you have some divergence that reflects some physical problem, but you have some magical operation, you hide it on the carpet, and you get with some finite result. So even now, some mathematicians consider that renormalization is magic. And for a long time, many theoretical physicists consider renormalization is magic. Well, that's not true anymore since the 70s, in particular, thanks to Ken Wilson. So, in fact, now the way we should proceed is the way we have proceeded in the following. We want to define a QFT, a quantum field theory, out of its correlation functions. Namely, the vacuum expectation value of products of fields operator. And by the way, in fact, there is a theorem that states that's, well, under some axioms, but which are satisfied by phi 4, at least in 2 and 3 dimensions, if you know all the correlation function of a quantum field theory, even in the Euclidean, and they satisfy some property, then you can construct a QFT, namely you can reconstruct an Hilbert space, an algebra of operators, which are bona fide quantum field theory. Okay. So we are interested in that, but we are interested to consider that through a functional integral. So we want to compute this by functional integration, exponential minus h bar. So I set h bar equal 1 in the calculation with some action of the field, of the quantum field. But we are going to use the renormalized action because we don't know yet. We have to make adjustment. We have to decide which action here in the functional integrals gives a sensible quantum field theory, so finite correlation functions. So the question is, what is SR? Okay, and what we did at one loop is that we enforce 2 conditions. We enforce that, well, out of these correlation functions, you can construct irreducible functions just by the Legendre transform and the manipulation of going from Feynman diagram to connected Feynman diagram and then to amputated one particle irreducible Feynman diagram. So that's just combinatorics. It's well defined. And we have defined 2 things. We wanted that the renormalized 2-point function, which is a function of 2 momenta, which is given by this diagram with P1, P2, up to the delta function of conservation of momenta. We want it to be equal to 0 at P1 equal P equals 0, which enforces that the theory is massless with a physical mass equal 0. And in addition, in fact, that's something we didn't have to work out, but we wanted also that this quantity, if P is different from 0, we want it to be free of ultraviolet divergences. So in fact, we wanted that considered this function, considered as a function of P, we want it also to be finite at some other value of the momenta. Or if you prefer, you consider that this function is a function gamma r 2 of p squared. You want p squared by Lorentz invariance. It's just a function of the square of the momenta. Okay, and we want it to be finite, ultraviolet finite. So for instance, you may choose the fact that the second derivative of this function, well, the derivative of this function with respect to p squared, this renormalized 2-point function at p squared is finite. Okay, I come back to that a bit later. This we didn't had to enforce because this was automatically enforced. We didn't have to look at that. So we wanted this first condition. 1, massless. Okay. Condition 2, we wanted that the 4-point function for the renormalized theory, which is a function of 4 momenta, P1, P2, P3, P4, which is given by this amputated irreducible function transition with momenta P1, P2, P3, P4. That's the irreducible function. Sorry. Yes?
We want that the second derivative is finite everywhere.
Pardon? No, that's the first derivative with respect to the square of the momenta.
Oh, so is it a finite everywhere, only finite and near the pole?
We want it to be finite. Okay, well, I'll come back to that a bit later, so don't worry. At the moment, keep this as the back of your mind.
Okay.
We don't need, that's not needed at one loop, but sometimes this is, you have to. Okay. So we wanted this also to be ultraviolet finite. And in fact, we had to introduce a coupling constant counter term in the phi 4 term with a renormalized mass. So in order to do that, in fact, what we did is that you can view what I explained yesterday by saying that we choose a momentum or mass scale mu, some energy that's equivalent to an energy scale E. Okay. And we measure the irreducible four point function. At some set of momenta specific at a specific set of momenta proportional to mu. And this set of momenta we choose was that at p1 plus p2 squared equal p1 plus p3 squared plus p1 plus p4 squared equal this equal mu squared. So this is a function of three momenta because of course we have still p1 plus p2 plus p3 plus p4 equals zero. But you can see that, you can check that in the set of momenta in four dimension satisfying this condition. So this is a space of 4 times 3. So it's a 12 dimensional space. You can easily find how to satisfy those three conditions. Okay. So that scores the reference point. Reference point in momentum space. Okay, and then we define, by definition, we said that the four-point function, you know, measured or calculated at this reference point, this defines a parameter, a coupling parameter, GR, that we called the renormalized coupling constant. Okay? So we have a theory, we don't know what is the action. We want to define a theory which is finite, which is ultraviolet finite and massless. So we want that the two-point function is zero at p squared equals zero. And we want that the four-point function is finite, ultraviolet finite, and its value for a specific choice of momenta, we call it the renormalized coupling constant. We call it, this is our definition of the coupling constant of the theory. Okay? And then the question is, are all correlation functions of the theory defined with this specific choice prescription for the mass and this specific choice for the coupling constant, are all correlation functions ultraviolet finite, of course, for all value of the momenta. Because the fact that the four-point function is finite for a specific choice of the momenta doesn't ensure that it's ultraviolet finite for other values of the momenta. We have to check whether this is possible. So in fact, what we did yesterday corresponds to that. So you see, if you view the renormalized coupling constant as this way, it's not mysterious. It's just that you have a theory, you want it to express it in terms of the parameter, and you define the coupling constant in this way. That's the renormalized coupling constant. That's the coupling constant of this theory measured at a specific momentum scale for a specific value of the momentum. So you can relate it, for instance, to the scattering probability, the scattering amplitudes of the theory for a for an experiment. You have two particles that give two particles for a specific choice of the energy and the momenta on shell of the theory. Yes?
What do we do if we like actually have different momenta in real life? Do we like rescale them to
get? Pardon? Yeah?
Like, let's say we have P1, P2, we choose particles with a certain energy.
Yes.
So how does that relate to the renormalization scale over here?
I'm going to show that. Okay. Okay, so that's what we did yesterday. And of course, we are doing we have been doing specific calculation at one loop order. So this general question, we are looking whether this is at least satisfied at one loop. But you can ask the same questions at two loops, three loops, and for a general theory. Okay. So that's what we did. And this was a question. Answer. In order to satisfy condition one, and this is condition two, answer. In order to satisfy condition one and two, which are renormalization condition, we showed that we had to take as a renormalized action an action which looks like the classical phi 4 action, but with renormalized parameters. So the parameter in the action, in the functional integral, are not just equal to those parameters. They are different, and precisely because of radiative correction. So A, B, and C are not 1, M squared, and G, normalized, because of radiative correction. And we found that A equals 1 up to order G squared, two loop. So B equals, we found this was minus G renormalized 1/2, 1/4 pi squared lambda squared. So there is a one loop correction, one loop radiative correction, which is of order lambda squared. If you want to have the mass, the physical mass to be equal to zero. And C is the renormalized coupling constant plus a counter term, which is gr squared, 3/2, 1/4 pi squared, log of lambda squared divided by mu squared. So here we introduce the momentum space energy, so the renormalization mass scale, we define GR, and you found that in order to have this, the two four-point function to be equal to GR for pi over the mu, C, this parameter has to be, is related, so it has to depend on mu and lambda. Okay. And we have seen that the those coefficients, you know, which are called counter terms, these are the what was viewed as the magic. This was the magic. Magic. Which cancelled the ultraviolet divergences of the theory, which, due to this diagram and this diagram. You see. So they appear naturally in the theory. If you enforce that the theory at scales of order mu is ultraviolet finite, you see that the action in the functional integral has to contain terms of order lambda squared, which makes the job of making those finite. Okay. So this is up to next order. So this is plus term of order G squared. This is plus term of order renormalized squared. And this is plus term of order G renormalized cube. So this is correction, two loop correction, first order loop, one loop correction, two loop correction, no one loop correction, but there might be two loop corrections. Okay. Okay, so now, does this make the jobs? So does this answer to this question? Does the correlation, all the correlation functions are ultraviolet finite? Well, we have seen that this is, so now are all correlation functions finite? Well, we have seen that this is true for the two-point function, because the renormalized two-point function now, which is a function of p squared, is just p squared. This diagram has been completely cancelled. So that's true plus something over the g squared. So it's trivially ultraviolet finite. Now, the renormalized four-point function, which is a function of the sets of momenta pi, there are four momenta, but constrained by the condition that the sum is zero. We computed it. It was given by the sum of the contribution of those diagrams. And we found that this was GR. And then it was minus GR squared, 1/2, 1/4 pi squared, times log of, and I just try to make no sign mistake, log of mu squared divided by p1 plus p2 squared plus log of mu squared divided by p1 plus p3 squared plus log of u squared divided by p1 plus p4 squared plus term of order gr cube, which are two loops order that I don't care. So this was the results of a calculation we did yesterday. And you see, this is a contribution of the bubble diagram where you have subtracted the dangerous logarithmic divergence by this counter term. Yes? Was the question?
Well, the first line should be OGR squared.
No, it's GR. Oh, yes, that's GR squared, of course. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Okay. So you see that this is satisfied. This is ultraviolet finite for any choice of the momenta. Not only for the specific choice of the momenta. So this is satisfied. Okay, good. This is good. We're happy. This is good. We're happy. Now, what about the renormalized six-point function, which is a function of six momenta? Well, we have seen that it is given by the triangle diagram. So it depends on six momenta. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And you have other diagram, which are the same diagram when you make just permutation of the momenta. So it's a symmetric combination of this function. Okay. So of course, these diagrams contain three vertices. So this diagram is of order C cube. But it's a one-loop diagram. There are no zero-loop diagram for this six-point function because we are dealing with a 5-4 theory. It contains no 5-6. Okay, so this is of order C cube. But C cube is GR cube plus higher order terms, which will correspond to two-loop diagram. So this is the term of order GR cube at one loop. So now we have to check whether this diagram is dangerous or not. You see, you just have this diagram. So you cannot have any counter terms to cancel a potential ultraviolet singularity here, an ultraviolet divergence. However, this diagram, if you have here a momentum, well, let's call it Q, Q1, Q2, Q3, where Q1 is P1 plus P2, Q2 is P3 plus P4, Q3 is P5 plus P6. This diagram is in momentum space. You have an internal momentum K flowing through the loop. So it's just D4K, well, divided by 2 pi to the power 4, 1 over K squared, 1 over K plus Q1 squared. It is the momentum here. Here you have 1 over K plus Q1 plus Q2, which is equal to minus Q3. So you can write this Q minus Q3 square. And here you have, of course, that Q1 plus Q2 plus Q3 equals zero. You still have conservation of the momenta. And you see that this integral, when k is large, behaves like an integral over four momenta times 1 over k to the 6. So it's convergent at large momenta. So it's finite. No ultraviolet divergences. So you don't have to care about ultraviolet divergence at one loop in this diagram. So it works. Okay. And that's, of course, similar. That's the same for the irreducible 8-point function, which is given by a square diagram, etc. The square diagram will behave like D4K over K to the power 8 So the higher the number of legs, the better the integral diverges. Okay. So this choice of renormalization makes the full massless 5-4 theory finite at one loop. So this is the job. Okay. So the answer to the question is yes. It works. At least at one loop. Okay, so that's what renormalization theory amounts to. Yes?
Is it possible for something to happen in higher loop order?
Yes, of course. There is a general theory of renormalization which states, which proves that order per order in perturbation theory, you can implement this method. So once you have made this at one loop, you may ask now, let's fix the same condition at two loop. Well, at two loop, the two-point function is going to have new terms. For instance, at two loop, well, let me write it here because it's at two loop, you had this, you dealt with this one, and then you have this one plus, I'm dealing with irreducible two-point function, so plus this one. And you see that, in some sense, this one is a combination of this diagram, which we dealt at one loop, and these diagrams, which we dealt at one loop because it's a bubble diagram. So in fact, those ones are not dangerous. You can check that what we did at one loop deals with this and this. But it remains this diagram, which is also logarithmically divergent, but in a more subtle way, because you have two loops, and the two loops gives two divergence. So these diagrams diverge like a log of lambda squared. But you can check that introducing a counter term here with a log of lambda gr squared makes the job. Well, the same for the four-point function. The four-point function at one loop is given by this. The four-point function at two loops, the irreducible four-point function, is given by this kind of diagram. Okay?
Not be dangerous.
And some other one. And then you have something which is this one. And then, of course, you have this one, which is also irreducible. I think that's it. And those one, basically, you recognize in some sense what you had before. This one is non-trivial, so it also gives a log of lambda squared. And this log of lambda squared will be dealt with a log squared of lambda squared. There will be a log of lambda squared at order gr squared. But there is a theorem, which in fact was proven in the end of the 50s by some Russian theoretician. So it's called the Bogolyubov-Parasyuk. These are the two Russian physicists. This is the famous Bogolyubov for the Bogolyubov transformation, which makes a lot of contribution in high energy physics, but also in condensed matter and in nuclear physics. And then you have Ophel Hepp and Zimmermann. Hepp was a Swiss physicist, I think. And Zimmermann was a German physicist who completed the proof. It's the same, which is denoted BPHZ theorem, which states that this works at all order. Okay. And then some other way to prove this have been devised by various people using randomization group ideas. So that's not the end of the stories. Yes?
Does this theorem work for every type of cutoff we use, or is it?
I think so, yeah. Because you have, here I've been using an explicit cutoff in order to do the calculation simply. But this theorem is, in some sense, independent of the cutoff. In fact, it proves that there is a mathematical subtraction procedure. There's some magic, if you want, some magic which amounts to introduce counter term when you have a cutoff, which works at all orders. So it's a theorem that proves that the magic works, and that the magic is, in fact, not dependent on the specific choice of cutoff. Yes?
I don't really see from that diagram how there are no UV divergences. Can you like go over it again? Like this?
About this diagram?
Yeah.
Well, it's simply that you understand this calculation,
yeah.
The fact that the amplitude in momentum space of this diagram is given by this integral.
Yeah.
Well, you see that when k is very large, you fix the momenta here, Q1, Q2, and Q3 to be something of order mu, for instance, or whatever they are, but they are just finite. You bound them by something. And then you look at what's happening when the momentum k, of course, if you have the cutoff, this is an integral which is bounded, but you can change lambda and see what's happening when lambda is very large. So when the k's are of order lambda, well, when the k's are of order lambda, you have in four momentum space, for instance, if you integrate the k between lambda and lambda minus something, you have something of order epsilon. And so here you have the volume of the shell of order epsilon, of width epsilon, around lambda. So this d4k contributes by an epsilon lambda cube, because it's a shell, a spherical shell in four dimensions. So it's a three-dimensional sphere. But then here all the k are of order lambda, so as they are much bigger than q. So the dominant term is just given by this. So this is 1 over lambda 6. And you integrate over lambda. So you see that this, in fact, it's better to write this as lambda 1 minus epsilon. So you have lambda 4. So you divide in shell in logarithmic scale. And then you see that this behaves like 1 over lambda squared. So if you introduce a cutoff, this is something which is finite plus term of order 1 over lambda squared. So this integral has no singularity when you introduce a cutoff and then let the cutoff go to infinity. And of course, that's different from this diagram, which contains a log of lambda. Okay? Thank you. Yes?
What about the subleading term for further integral?
Which one? In which diagram?
Just that diagram. We can have the.
Here?
Yeah, the subleading term.
Well, this is a leading term. The leading term is of order 1 when you take lambda goes to 0, to infinity. This is the first subleading term. You are going to have a subleading term, but it's going to be of order 1 over lambda 4, etc. This finite term will, of course, depend on Q1, Q2, and Q3.
Uh-huh.
You see?
I'm a bit confused. Why we have a term proportional to Q1, Q3 is finite? Because
no.
Because the integral of d4k over k, maybe k to the power.
No, but they are bounded. So you see, this is a function. Let's call it the function t, for, well, not, but it's now, we, I had already a function t, but let's call it a function tr for triangle of q1, q2, q3, and of lambda, if you have a cutoff. The question is, given some choice of q1, q2, q3, does this have a limit when lambda goes to infinity? And from this calculation, you see that this is true. Because if you set lambda to infinity in this integral, you get a convergent integral, which gives a function, which is this finite point. So this has a limit when lambda goes to infinity, which exists, which is the amplitude of the triangle diagram in the full quantum field theory with no cutoff. Okay. Well, it took us some time, but I think that's useful to have this kind of discussion. So, I think now I don't think I will have time to discuss what's happening when you have a theory with a mass, but there are details in my lecture notes. That's not the most important point. So, I'm going to keep the discussion for the massless theory going on. And I discuss now the second point, running Koblig constant and renormalization group. But maybe it's a good, good time to make a break. So let's make a break now and resume the lecture in 5 minutes. Okay. Let me start again and introduce the concept of renormalization group in this picture of perturbation theory. So in fact, the concept of having a renormalization group, in fact, I think it was introduced in the end of the 50s or 60s in the context of QED by Gell-Mann, Lau, Stückelberg. I don't remember very well the history. So it comes from it's from some studies on QED, and then it was extended to more general theory. So it's an old concept. Okay. So the question is now: you have seen that. Let's go back to what we did here. We had a quantum field theory, and we said, okay, we define the renormalized Koblig constant. That's the way we measure whether the theory is strongly coupled or weakly coupled, by measuring, by making some experiment or making some calculation, here computing the four-point function for a specific choice of momenta. But of course, you could consider that you have the same theory, so it's the same physical system, the same particles with the same interaction. And you may ask, what's happened if I make the experiment and at another energy scale? Then, of course, I expect to get, I might very well get a different result. We define another renormalized coupling constant. So the question is, how does GR depends on the choice of renormalization scale mu. That's the choice of energy of your experiment. For the same, you know, for a given system, namely a given QFT. You may have this question for how QED, or how QED is a mass electron, is the mass of the electron, the charge of the electron is the charge of the electron, and we do not expect that they are going to, you know, change at the fundamental level, that the fundamental law of the universe changes when you make an experiment, even in quantum mechanics. Okay. for a given system. Well, the answer is contained, of course, in the value of the four-point function, because the four-point function for a given choice of momenta shouldn't change. So, gamma r4, the renormalized four-point function of 4, so it's a function of our choice of momenta here. But in fact, in this formula, you see, it's also a function of gr, of course, and it's a function of the renormalization scale. You see, as a mathematical function. And we expect that, considered as a function of the PIs. So here now, this is a function, those are the argument, physical argument of the function. That's the thing that we change when we make experiment. And these are parameters. Which labels the theory. The fundamental theory. If you measure let's think about QED. If you measure the four-point function for electrons, and you measure the four-point function for muons. Muons are and electrons are different mass. Well, they have the same charge, so that's a bad example. But imagine that you had, you can say just that, do the same thing for the electron and for the, that's a bad example also because the interaction, not really, no. Make the experiment for the electron and for the positron. They have opposite charge, so they behave differently when you have an electric field. The electron moves in one direction, the positron moves in another direction. So those are different. So function, the three-point function for the electron and for the positron is different because we are dealing with a different theory. We are dealing with theory of electrons or a theory with positrons. Of course, it just changed by a sign, but so that's a trivial example. But imagine that you had a particle with charge 2e. Or 3e will be different. So these are parameters of the theory. These are the physical argument. So now the point is that since these are parameters of the theory, but as a function of the argument, this function should be the same for the same values of the argument, the physical argument, if you define the parameter by a different procedure. So for instance, if you define the renormalized coupling constant for a different choice of energy scale, u prime, and if you choose a different choice of energy scale, then you are going to get a different choice of coupling constant. So different choice of mu leads to a different value for gr. I'm sorry, this is gr prime for mu prime and gr. But they define the same theory.
Sorry, what is that equality sign?
Pardon?
That equality sign?
The equality C means that for a given theory, this function should be equal to this one. So there should be a relation between gr and mu and gr prime and mu prime. In other words, choose mu. Choose mu. You get gr. Now, choose mu prime, you get gr prime. But they cannot be independent. So they must be, or not, there is a relation between gr and gr prime.
For similar, the same like for momentum that we choose?
For any choice of momenta. So in other words, this function should be the same function when you get gr and gr prime. So in other words, if you choose, let's be more specific. Choose a mu naught. That's a reference, our reference point, or first. That's a unit. So if you work, for instance, in the metric system, the unit of length is a meter. So the unit of momenta is 1/meter. And well, we see, but the inverse of momenta. So that's defines those. Choose mu naught. Then, and you have a theory where the theory for a choice of mu naught, the coupling constant is given by G naught. Then, if you choose a different choice of mu, you should have a GR. GR should be a function of mu such that when mu equal mu naught, gr of mu naught equal g naught r. There must be a relation. They cannot be independent. So in other words, let's draw a picture, which is in my lecture notes. Here, I plot the possible value for gr. Here, I plot the different value for mu. And in fact, it's better to write log mu. I make a choice of mu naught. Well, log mu naught. Let's write mu. That's simple. So I have a theory which is characterized by the given gr when mu. If I measure the coupling constant at different scale, mu, I get a priori a different gr. You see, this is gr. And there is a relation between them for any choice of mu. So in other words, there is a curve which defines the function gr of mu such that gr mu naught, gr mu naught. So this choice of mu and gr define the same theory.
But like, is this an assumption?
What?
Is this an assumption?
No, no. This is a property of the four-point function. And you can check, what is this relation? Which relation? Well, that's easy. You just write that G0 R minus G0 R squared, 1/2 of 1/4 pi squared log of mu squared over, so the momenta plus tata plus tata plus term of order gr cube, which is gr zero cube. You want it to be equal to gr minus gr squared 1/2, this is mu naught, 1/4 pi squared log of mu squared divided by the choice of momenta plus the other terms plus O of gr. This is G0 gr. So you want to find a cube, I'm sorry, cube and cube. So this is a relation. This gives you, if you know mu naught and mu, and you know G naught, you know G. And you get, what do you get? You get that gr, well, which is a function of mu, has to be equal to, well, GR, well, you can, let's write it in terms of, you get a relation which is GR of mu here, minus GR of mu squared times, the difference between those two terms is the log. So it's just, you get 3/2, 1 over 4 pi squared, log of mu squared divided by mu naught squared has to be equal to GR naught plus term of order GR naught cube. If you work out that this is equal to this, the solution is this. You see, because what changes is just the log of mu naught. Here you have log of mu naught and log of mu, and you don't care of the momenta. So this is a relation between GR or mu and GR naught. Yes?
Can we think intuitively about this, like thinking that with certain G, with certain G, you have like a lattice, but then if you go to another G prime, it's like renormalizing the lattice?
No, here I'm not thinking anymore about whether there is a lattice or no lattice. This is a relation for the continuum QFT, so the theory in space-time. There is no lambda anymore, no cutoff. I'll go back, if I have time, the end of the lecture, I go back to the fact that's a relation when the theory when there is a lattice. So now I'm dealing with a continuum QFT, no cutoff. Okay?
So I think that like the question probably that he was having, or at least I have, is how you can say that, how can you assume that they are going to be equal?
I'm not assuming, they have to be equal. I'm dealing with a given physical quantity. The four-point function are function of the momenta. You see? The physical quantity is determined by, you know, the parameter. For instance, it is defined by the action in the functional integral. But once you have taken the limit lambda goes to zero, it's just everything is a function of the momenta. And what you think about the parameter of the C, the mass or the coupling constants, you are just objects that you measure out of the correlation function or out of the scattering amplitudes. Yeah. You cannot tune the mass of the electron in an experiment. You cannot tune the charge of the electron. You measure it, and then you do calculation. And of course, as a theoretician, you ask, okay, what would be the result if the mass of the electron would be different? And you have a general formula which depends on the mass of the electron and on the charge of the electron. But then, if you do actual experiment and you do what are the consequences in chemistry or in whatever of QED, well, you have to set the charge of the electron to be the number which is measured in experiment, and the mass of the electron which is measured in experiment. So you have to realize that, of course, when you work a theory, the parameters are free parameters because you have a mathematical expression. But when you are doing physics, you have to fix them to their actual value. And when you ask a question is, what are the properties of a system of electrons when you make electron-positron collision, for instance, in high-energy physics, at a given energy, you have a parameter that you can tune, which is the energy of the electrons. But you cannot, but the charge of the electron or the mass of the electron is not a parameter you can tune in your experiment. So you can tune, you can change the p's. So those are physical arguments, and you can vary them by varying your experiments. But you cannot change the parameters, the mass and the coupling constants. They are what they are. Yes?
Yet in some sense, like as we change our reference point, we are changing the energy scale theory.
We are changing the energy where we define what is the, where we measure what is the renormalized coupling constant.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm going to go back to your remark, but I see what you have in mind later on, in 5 minutes. Okay. So this is a relation. So this relation means that there is a relation between GR of mu. So this is GR of mu as a function of mu. And you see that it depends on GR just here by your log. And there is a log because the ultraviolet singularities of the theory are logarithm. Okay. So, and we have this general relation, you see. This is a crucial relation. It states that the four-point function with this choice of GR and this choice of mu has to be equal as a function of PI to this other function, which is a function of PI and parameter GR prime and mu prime. But this is the same function for all values of P's. Okay?
It seems like that implies that if the four-point correlation function is the same for all values of P.
Yes.
And for all values of mu, is that correct? Like where's
for all values of mu prime, if you change GR to be GR of mu prime, so you, if so, that's correct. If GR prime is equal to this function, GR of mu prime with the initial condition that GR of mu equal GR. So if you prefer, add zeros here. I switch notation. So if you prefer, add zero here and add GR mu.
Doesn't that imply that, like in an experiment, like the scattering amplitudes will all be the same? The scattering amplitudes are independent of mu?
They are not. Well, as a function of two parameters, they are not independent of mu if you fix GR. So you see.
We're saying that they should be independent.
They are independent if GR and mu satisfy this condition. But of course, if you start here from a different G naught. You have a different curve.
Oh.
Start here from a different here. You have a different curve. So these are, if you compare this and this, those are different theories. Those are theories where the interaction between the particles at the same energy scale is different. So remember that G measures the repulsive interaction between bosons in phi-4. So if G is small, the bosons are weakly interacting. They repel themselves weakly, so they don't see each other. If G is large, they are strongly repelling. So those are different physical theory.
Yeah, so, but the thing is that by making that equality, it seems like the actual outcome of an experiment should be independent of the energy scale that I choose.
No, the outcome of the, I'm sorry, what do you mean by the energy scale that you choose? Well, you mean the P's? In an experiment, the energy is the energy of the particles.
Oh.
And so it depends on P. And I'm going to go back to this in a moment. So, you see. So, you see, so imagine that you have a theory of interacting bosons. You know just that it's a 5-4 theory. So you know that it's a quantum field theory where you have bosons, and you know that they interact by contact interaction. So they are like, billiard balls, tuck, tuck, table, pool, ball, tuck. You know that by locality or some reason. So, okay. But what you don't know is what's the strength of their interaction. So in order to do that, well, you do a scattering experiment at a given energy scale, mu naught. And you measure, you make the statistics, and you see, okay, the parameter I have to choose when I'm doing my calculation is GR naught. Now, if I make the scattering of the same particles but at higher energy, of course, I'm going to find a different value because the four-point function depends on the momenta in some specific way, which is contained there. It's contained in the log of the momenta squared in the denominator.
So, I guess my confusion now is that it seems like mu is kind of the g that we need to pick in our theory in order to get the correct results for the experiment depend on the energy scale.
No, well, no, it's not, yeah. The value of G R that you need to put in your formula for the four-point function depends on the energy scale at which G R is defined, because you cannot define a four-point function without having both a GR and a mu naught. But once you get that, you get four-point functions, which are, of course, independent on those choices. It's just parametrization. It's just how you parameterize the thing. Sometimes it's just a change of, it's just a scale. It's just a change of scale in your formula. You know, for
instance. So can we say that mu is like a function of the total energy of the momenta? Like, can we say mu is a function of the momenta?
Mu is just the energy scale at which you define what you call coupling constant.
I guess from this expression principle, and let me ask you.
Let me go back. I know this is a bit subtle. That's a subtle point. That's why it took some time to the people to understand what is the meaning of this. But okay, so I'm going to see here to discuss that. Okay, so let's go back to that. So you see that you have this relation between the coupling constant as a function of the energy scale at which it is defined. So, well, here we have an explicit expression, but when you have a curve, in fact, it's better to write it in a differential form. So better to write the relation in a differential form. Because in fact, if you change mu by a small amount, you get something and then you can repeat the operation. Okay. And so this leads to an important concept that is, you know, lurking everywhere in quantum field theory and in some of statistical mechanical problems, which is called the concept of a beta functions, which are defined in the following way. So, I start from a renormalized coupling constant G naught. Okay, so GR naught, and the given energy scale mu naught. So I start from this point. And I'm asking what's happening when I make a change now along these curves. So how long of that I get a function GR naught of mu, well, GR of mu for a choice of energy scale mu. And I may ask, how does GR of mu vary with mu. So I take the differential form of this relation when I vary mu. And since you see that log of mu lurking everywhere, better to take the logarithmic derivative. So I consider this function along the curve, where, of course, I start from gr of mu naught equal gr naught. So along this curve, you see? Well, in order to get this function, you just make a derivative of this relation with respect to mu. Result, you found that it's 3 over 4 pi squared times gr of mu squared plus higher order terms. Well, this by definition is called the beta function. So it's a beta function of gr of mu. So, and you see that, so this is the result of the calculation. This is equivalent to this. This relation is equivalent to this relation. It's just the differential form of this relation, because I fix gr or not, so when I vary mu, I vary gr and I express it. Okay. And that's the definition of the beta function. So the beta function is defined by this relation. And this is the result of the calculation. And you see from this form, this is the result of the calculation. You see that the beta function is a function of gr of mu only. If I was computing the beta function of gr of mu along this curve, I get the same function of gr of mu. Simply now, gr of mu has to be taken here instead of here. So, in fact, I can forget about the gr of mu. I can define the beta function beta of g r as 3 over 4 pi squared gr squared. And at one loop, that's enough. So this is the beta function. This is the beta function for the 5-4 theory. Okay, and so you see that this equation, in that case, mu dd mu of gr of mu equal beta of gr of mu, is just what is called in mathematics a flow equation. This is a flow equation generated by a vector flow. By a vector field in the space of G, of coupling constant. And this vector field is just a beta function. So in fact, here, you consider that you have just the G renormalized line. And its beta function is just a function of GR. You see that you have a flow, a vector here, a vector here, a vector here. And you see that if this is the origin, the smaller g, the smaller the vector field is. And it tells you just that when I vary mu, g moves a little bit. If I'm here, it moves a lot of zero. So this is just an equation like that. It's just a vector flow equation as a function of the parameter mu d d mu of g of mu equal beta of g of mu, which means simply that when I express g of mu, this is the integral curve generated by the flow. A flow in one dimension is something very simple. But in fact, imagine that you have a theory where you have two coupling constants, g1 and g2. And that's in general what happens. You have different coupling constants. In the standard model, you have coupling constants associated to the coupling of the leptons with the gauge field. You have a coupling constant associated to the x. So in general, in fact, in this case, you are going to have a vector field with two components. So the beta function is going to be a vector field. Okay? And each beta 1 and beta 2 is a function of g1 and g2. And beta 2 is a function, another function of g1 and g2. So you have a vector field like that. And if you want to know how the coupling constant g, which is given by a vector g1 and g2, how it depends on mu, you have to integrate an equation which is mu d d mu of the vector g equals the vector beta, which is a function of the vector g. So you start from here, and you follow the flow. And if you started here from here, you follow a different flow. So in general, in the space of coupling, the running of the coupling constant with the parameter mu follow a flow equation. Okay, so now I want to continue with the concept of one number. Well, my God, I am going a bit slowly. So let me just mention two things. First, let's go back to the question that you ask. I have a theory given by where the coupling constant G R naught is defined with reference to mu naught. So now I can ask a question that we are asking, which is a physical question, not a mathematical question. If I change the momenta by a rescaling of the momenta, and let me just not make a mistake about the what is written here. No, it's not written here. It's written somewhere. No. Okay, I've lost. It's lost in my notes. Okay, so imagine that you rescale by the factor lambda. Well, lambda is a bad word. By a factor x, the momenta. So if you take x larger than 1, you go to higher energies in your experiment. in your experiment. Okay. So then you want to compare, for instance, the scattering amplitudes for some momenta p and for some momenta xp. So you see how is the four-point function of your theorem for momenta p's ice. How is it related? What is the relation with the scattering amplitudes at momenta pi? Are they bigger? Are they smaller? Well, what you can do is the following trick from this expression. Gamma 4 of x times the momenta pi. I write the expression. There are a function, of course, in my formula of gr and of mu 0. My choice of coordinate mu. Okay, let's call it gr 0 and mu 0. Then, of course, since it's a log of mu divided by p, you can check very easily that this is gamma 4 of the pi's of gr 0 and of mu divided by x, mu 0 divided by x. This is just dimensional analysis. In my formula, the four-point function depends only on ratio between momenta and the momentum scale. So this is of x. So this is trivial. Now, I know from a normalization that this four-point function is the same four-point function than another theory where the renormalization scale is mu naught, but I have a new GR which depends on x, because changing mu g fixed is the same thing than changing g mu fixed. See, this is renormalization group. This is the renormalization concept of renormalization. And well, you can do the same trick. You can do, what is the relation? What is the between GR of x and x? Well, it is given precisely by the same equation. You get x d dx of GR of x equals the beta function of gr of x, because it amounts to change mu. So for my 5-4 theory, this is gr of x squared with a factor of 3 over half 2 pi squared. Okay. So you see, this is a plus sign. So it means that as a function of your energy scale in your experiment, the scattering at high energy is the same than the scattering at low energy with a higher coupling constant. So This GR of X is called the running coupling constant. And as a function of R, of course, when X equals zero, you start from G naught, GR naught. And it grows with X. This is GR of X, the running coupling constant. So from the somehow mathematical relation, which states how, for a given theory, the coupling constant, the renormalized coupling constant that you measure depends on the energy scale, you get a physical quantity. How does the strength of the interaction scales with the energy, the effective scales of the energy? Making scattering of particles in this theory at high energy is like making scattering amplitudes at low energy, but with a higher, stronger repulsive interaction. So higher energy, strong interactions. And this comes from the fact that the beta function that I have not driven here, but this comes from the fact that the beta function of the coupling constant as a function of the coupling constants goes like that. It's a parabola for small g. The beta function behaves like some b factor times g squared with b zero positive. You see? And in the opposite, if you go to low energy, the interaction is smaller. So the weaker the energy, well, the smaller the energy, the weaker the interaction is. And that's a quantum phenomenon. It's not predicted by the classical theory. We have seen that in the classical theory, the coupling constant is dimensionless. So this means that in the classical theory, the coupling constant doesn't depend on the energy scale, on the scale of distance of energy. But we have seen that in the classical energy, in the classical theory, and I'm going to end up there because it's already late. In the classical theory, the running coupling constant is equal to G0, it's independent on X, because this beta function comes from the one loop diagram. The theory is the scale invariant. In the quantum theory, G of X depends on X, and this can mean only something. The theory is not scale invariant. There is a scale anomaly, which is a quantum phenomenon. So that's the first example of the classical symmetry, which is spoiled. This is a classical symmetry. And it's spoiled at the quantum level by an anomaly. See? And if you think in terms of symmetries, and that's the detail of the calculation are given in my notes, when you have a symmetry, you have a current. So you have a current G mu of X, which is a neuter. Current, which is conserved at the classical level. But when you compute This neutral current can be defined in the quantum theory. The details are in the notes. And if you compute in the quantum theory what is this one, you find the factor h bar. I have not written the h bar anymore, but there is an h bar that comes out, so it's a quantum effect. And you find the coefficient which depend on the coupling constant, which is precisely the beta function times an operator of the theory, because remember, this is a quantum operator. So the divergence of a quantum operator has to be an operator. And the operator which appears is a phi 4 operator. So it's precisely the interaction operator of the theory. So that's because the theory is interacting. So this is a beta function. It's a function of the coupling constant. This is the phi 4 operator, quantum operator. This is now a quantum operator. And this is, of course, different from zero. So you see that there is a quantum anomaly. The current is not conserved. The non-conservation term is of order h bar, so it's a one-loop order, one-loop term, but there are going to be higher order loop terms in the higher calculation. And the beta function can be viewed just as the coefficient of the anomaly for the scaling symmetry. Okay, so that's the first example of an anomaly. And I'm going to end up there. I have been already too late. So, well, too bad for the last point, but if you are interested in seeing that, you can look at the notes where I'm discussing that and where I'm giving an example of calculation which makes a bridge between the renormalization in perturbation theory and renormalization from the point of view of Wilson. And this afternoon I'm leaving for France, so you can't knock at my door, and otherwise you would be welcome. But you are welcome next week. I'm back on Wednesday. So on Wednesday we'll start to discuss quantization of gauge theories, where this will come out again, because the properties of the beta function of the gauge theories have very interesting properties. Okay. Thank you.